Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Ronald J. Martin. Ron, we are without our boy today. We're without Barnabas Piper. He's out traveling, saving the world, doing Piper things. The world needs to be saved, doggone it. I hope he's successful in that. I really hope he, like, you know what? You know what would be a good business trip for Piper? If he goes out and in the span of a couple days, like, restores baseball, I don't know, makes it so that we can go back to movies and restaurants and, you know, gets football back on track. Just, yeah, if you could go ahead and do that, Pipe, while you're out.
Just take care of that in your spare
time. Just take care of all that.
Whatever it is you're doing. Yeah. Whatever reason you couldn't be with us.
Yeah, that's right, man. But here we are again, baby, having to, like, carry this thing on our own as we've done so many times in the past, dude. And that doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm not intimidated by it. In fact,
baby, we got
it. I like it. I embrace the challenge, you know.
Absolutely.
You and I, we're radio pros. We'll do whatever's asked for us, whatever we need to do for the sponsors.
We always step up.
We do, dude. We always step up to the plate. And baby, today I thought we could talk a little bit just about the creative process. People get mad when we get too sportsy. People get mad when we get too Downton Abbey-ish. People are fickle, baby. People are just, they're tough to please. But I feel like we do have some, like, creative types that listen to the program. We've got some musicians, some writers, some film type people. Yeah. And I just kind of want to talk about it because you and I have a lot of, like, personality overlap. And I think we approach the creative process in a pretty similar way. But I wanted to kind of talk about how, for you, making records maybe has differed from, like, making a movie for me, and how how the whole book thing works. Because I'll be honest with you, dude. So, like, my dream, and this is when I was young and I didn't know anything, right? So this is, like, early college graduate. I'm in my early 20s. I decide I want to write. I start chipping away at some stuff with ESPN and start thinking about books. And I always thought, dude, books will be like Apex Mountain because I can work all by myself. You know, I can do it my way. I can do it by myself. Little did I know there would be, like, agents and editors and just all kinds of people to please, and marketing people once the book's done. And so it is wildly collaborative. You know, but still there's those sweet moments where you do get to be alone with the material and you get to kind of shape it. But I wondered how, like, what it looked like making a record for you, like, back in the day, as it pertains to, like, how open to collaboration were you? How, like, kind of iconoclastic and loner-ish were you, and what did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it was 100% like lonerism, sure. Because, you know, so the nature of the kind of music I did, it wasn't very, at least at the time, it is a little bit more now, but it wasn't very, like, jam-oriented, right? So it's just me in a room with all kinds of, you know, equipment, synths and stuff, electronics. So it just didn't really lend itself for collaboration. Although, you know, again, a lot of guys collaborate, you know, within that particular style. But for me, it was really about just having, you know, I would write the songs, and then I would spend months upon months sort of producing them in my own studio. I always had a home studio. So it was just something that did not open itself up to collaboration. Yeah. And I think I was most comfortable with that. Now, when you got to things like, you know, mixing the record or getting into, you know, the artwork, you know, I was signed to a label. So it had to be a collaborative thing when it got to those ends. Yeah. But I still had total artistic control over all of those ends. So basically it was a matter of working with, like, a graphic design company, whether it was in-house or somebody they would hire in. And it was just basically, so the collaboration was them coming to me saying, what are you thinking about? What do you want? And me sending them a bunch of ideas. And then that was about as collaborative as the record making process got. But that was really by choice.
Yeah.
Because I just felt like there was nobody else out there. And again, this is part of my Enneagram 4, but there was nobody else out there that was going to understand what it was that I was trying to do.
Yeah.
So collaboration was never going to be incredibly helpful for me. Although in hindsight, I mean, I look back and I go, oh man, I see all kinds of places where that would have for sure, like, benefited me.
Yeah.
You know,
no question.
But again, I was younger and, you know, and all those kinds of things happen where it's like, I was just so scared that I wasn't going to get to produce or create the end product that I had in my head. And collaboration, this is what's weird, felt like a threat to that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Me too, dude.
Yeah.
Definitely in the early years, collaboration felt like it was that word had very negative connotations. you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, and I think it was the nature of what I did because it wasn't a band. It was me. Yeah. Now, when I went on the road, I had a band,
sure,
but they were just playing what I already produced and what the record, you know, already was. But man, just in terms of like, okay, I got these songs that I've poured over, I've written. It's like, it wasn't really about inviting someone in to help me translate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was just like, that just feels crazy to me. Now, if I would have worked with a couple of guys in a band format where we would have put together these songs in a more collaborative fashion, that would have made sense. But again, it was a weird kind of music where it didn't really lend itself to that. And, so collaboration to me always felt threatening. And then moving forward, and we can get to this later, but moving forward even into pastoring, prepping sermons, you know, preparing talks. I mean, it kind of continued into that, although I would say I'm far more collaborative, oddly enough, with those things now than I ever was with music, because I don't look at preaching and talks like it's my baby.
Sure.
You know, it's more like, hey, like, you know, I'll sit down with Big M. I'm like, hey, here's some things I got. Can you just feed into it? You know what I mean? Like, give me some thoughts. Like, I'm wide open.
Some of that's maturity too. You know, I think I'm much more open to collaboration now than I was like 15 years ago. You know,
tell me about what I said about collaboration feeling almost threatening. How did that affect you?
Well, dude, I have a comment and then a question. But first, I want to talk about our sponsor, baby. I almost forgot this. Nice. Our sponsor is Harvest House Publishing. And it's a new book by the boy, by Ted Klug, called The Outstanding Life of an Awkward Theater Kid. Funny story about this, baby. So this is a graphic novel. It's about theater. It's the second in a series. The first one was The Extraordinary Life of a Mediocre Jock. This one is The Outstanding Life of an Awkward Theater Kid, again, by Harvest House. Funny story. So when COVID hit, they just kind of went dark, dude. Harvest House went dark. Mm. We were having all these great, like, you know how in the lead up to a book release, you have all the big, like, conference calls with all the marketing people and all the people you've never met in real life. And they all get on a real, like, crackly, like, really crappy audio, like, conference call, and they're throwing ideas out, and you're like, oh man, this is gonna be big, you know, this feels good, this is gonna be the one.
Everybody's convinced,
dude. It's like the NFL draft.
Everybody's gonna retire.
Everybody's going to the Super Bowl after this one. Yeah.
Everybody's Frankie Chan.
Everybody's Frankie Chan. Everybody's getting the lake house after this graphic novel drops. So we have all those calls, everybody's feeling good, and then COVID hits, and they're up in the Pacific Northwest. I think they're in like Portlandia, actually. So their town is probably being taken over by, like, I don't know, idealistic, like, protesters and rioters. And I don't even know if they have an office anymore, but they kind of went dark for a while. And I didn't know what was happening with my book release. And like, none of the influencers had gotten copies. None of the, like, launch team people had gotten copies. And
dude, are you kidding?
Yeah, dude. So come to find out, they just, like, shuttered the office for like 3 months. And finally, like, they're coming out of hibernation and getting back up to speed. Wow. So we're kind of going to do a second release on this book. But people should check it out. It's very funny. It's a graphic novel written for, like, middle school age readers. No sort of Tolkienian, fantastic, created worlds, nothing like that. It's just about a kid who goes to school and has a lot of the problems that that we had and have. And there's some gospel stuff in there, too. So
baby, is it kind of a re-release? So it was already released and they're going to do kind of a re-release?
Well, dude, in true Ted Klug fashion, and this is just how lucky I am in life, baby, just how things always fall into place for me.
Oh, absolute. I'm already envious.
Yeah, the book release was basically like the week of COVID. Like, we released COVID on Twitter, and like, my book kind of followed, and you know, there was just no room for Big T's little graphic novel. And
if only you could have gotten like COVID on the cover.
If I could have a
mediocre theater kid like in COVID.
In a mask. Like, if I could have put him in a mask on the cover,
totally, absolutely,
with a T-shirt that said "Shelter in Place."
Absolutely,
shelter at home.
Only,
yeah.
You missed such a great option,
dude. Totally, I gotta capture some of that energy, you know, the next time around. But at any rate, we've partnered with Jeff Bezos and his little company, Amazon. He's been amazing to work with, as always. Just what a great dude, man. Salt of the earth, Jeff.
Jeff's a great guy. We've had a lot of good time.
But dude, the thing is, like, they're selling it. They're selling the book. And if you buy it via Jeff's company, Amazon, a little bit of the proceeds go to me, a little bit of the proceeds go to them. And, Yeah, that's.
Baby, I've never heard of Amazon, man. Can you describe?
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, it used to be like just a bookshop, like an online bookshop, and now they sell literally everything. So you should check it out, man.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, the URL there is www.amazon.com. Lots of products, dude. Lots of great products. But my question, and then I'm going to answer your question.
Yeah, lay it out.
And I was going to do this off the air, but I forgot, and so now I'm going to do it on the air. Are we going to collab a little score for Silverdome? Is that still in the works?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice, baby.
Oh, absolutely. Nice. Yeah. I'm still putting together the new stude,
yeah.
And I'm getting close, but I've just, you know, things kind of obviously, you know, as it shut down for your book.
Yeah.
It's shut down for this a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm real close, and I'm gonna take a look and a listen, and I'm gonna put something together. It's gonna be
good. Dude, you know what I need to do? Not to be that awkward friend. I just realized how bad this is gonna sound. But what if I finagled a couple days up in A-Town, man? You and I could get into this.
Well, I mean, that would be.
We could get into the stude together and
that'd be fantastic.
Work some magic on this thing, and it would be the kind of collab where this is the kind of collaborator I am. I don't ever tell like anybody what to do who's outside of my realm of expertise. Like I only know how to do two things in this world. Like I'm a writer and a football coach. That's it. I literally have nothing else to offer. So
there's nothing.
Like the artists on my graphic novels, people are always like, "Oh, did you provide like some sketches or some direction?" I'm like, "Nope. That's their job." Like I literally just sent them the story. And I sent them the story.
It's a hard no.
Yeah, the artwork was great. And it will be the same with Silverdome. But yeah, baby, to answer your question, like early in my career, I think collaboration was always a super negative word. And this is insecurity talking, right? And this is immaturity the Lord talking. There was always a sense of, well, wow, if we have to collaborate, that must mean that like my thing wasn't good enough on its own. And so I always felt really threatened by the idea of like, you know, you get those editors, you get those like acquisitions editors in publishing who really like want to roll up their sleeves and, you know, rip the work to pieces. And I always dreaded those people, man. And even before that, doing magazine work, you know, with ESPN and other places, just getting the real handsy like editor was always the nightmare. But yeah, man, by God's grace, I think I've grown in that as I've gotten older. And also as I've seen how editorial can really move a book forward. And, you know, it's happened enough times where they've suggested some changes and I've been like, that really does kind of make sense. You know, and I think it's a combination of age, hopefully sanctification, hopefully like just, you know, the Lord shaving away at my ego and chipping it away so that I can be more like him.
But
now it's an easier thing. And now it's funny, man, with the movie, like, it's been really collaborative. That has been frustrating at times, but by and large, when I think about releasing the picture, I just really get happy because I think about celebrating it with all those guys, like all the guys who I did this with. And we all were pulling and sacrificing in the same direction and we all had disappointments. But at the end of the day, when it drops, it's going to be really exciting and I'll have people to celebrate it with, you know, it won't just be me.
Yeah. It's just so you have something to share. Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, one of the first things I actually collaborated on was the first book we did back in 2012.
Really? That was one of your first collabs in life?
I mean, yeah, I'd done a couple of records with one with my brother back in 2008 and then, the Foxglove Hunt, you know, some of the stuff you've heard with a guy named Rob Witham out of Arizona. And, so I'd done some of that and that was really fun for me because I sort of let my guard down a little bit to do that. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, oh man, there's so much less pressure when you actually have somebody else in the mix.
Yeah.
And then even writing that book with you, it was like, oh man, okay. So we can like come together on something. I don't have the pressure of writing like 10 chapters.
Yeah.
I can just write 4 or 5 chapters. And then I think what you just said kind of nailed it, which is like, it's so much more fun to be able to celebrate it with somebody rather than it just being this like solo thing, right? Because you don't have anybody to celebrate with when it's just your own thing.
Well, and to be clear, not that we've ever had anything to celebrate together. I mean,
we've celebrated the release.
That's true. That's true.
You know? But, we have not celebrated massive sales.
That's right.
You know,
we're not buying the boats together yet, baby.
But yeah, not quite yet. I mean, we do have a lake house, but just the boats haven't been able to
accomplish. Scooters, baby? Vespas, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still waiting for that.
I think we're there.
I think it's time.
I think it is time.
It's time.
I think it is time.
Exactly.
So,
No, you're right, man. It, it can be a really fun thing. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as I look forward and I look at the rest of my career, who knows what that'll be like. But yeah, the idea of collabing, the idea of co-authoring, you know, it's not such a scary thing anymore. And to your point about our books, I think we knew right away when we met each other that we were the right guys to collab with, in the sense that like, I wasn't going to try to be digging into your stuff and vice versa. And that, like, the trust level was there immediately, yeah, because sure. Yeah, neither of us were trying to like alpha dog the thing to death. And I think if I was going to collab with somebody again in a book context, it would have to be something like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No. And I think that's a really good point too, because I think there is that sense of trust that you have to cultivate for a collaboration to really work and to really like have some fruit to it. You know what I mean? You definitely got to have that sense and that level of trust, because the other thing I like about it too, man. And I've always said this to people, especially on when you're talking about books and you know, books are more based now on platforms and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I like about collaborating on that level is you really get to benefit from the other person's like fan base and platform.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And so that's one of the great things about it, which is like, especially if you're working with somebody who really has, you know, really operated in some different worlds than you have. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's what a great thing for those people to, you know, come into contact with your work, because that doesn't happen without a collaboration. So that's something that I really did.
Totally.
The potential.
Totally. Yeah, I do too, man. I do too. Definitely. So dude, I have a question for you about like satisfaction in the creative process, because I think, you know, for whatever industry you're in, I think there's a sense of fascination for industries that you're not in. And, you know, like for me as a writer, as a football player, I've always loved music, like always, always loved listening and buying records and just being a fan, dude. And like, I never had any pressure to be a musician. Like, and I never thought of myself as even potentially being that. Like my parents never made me take piano lessons or any of that stuff. So like for me, it was hitting a certain age. It was starting to buy records and CDs. And I have to imagine, and like my feeling has always been, man, if you can make a great record, that must be really satisfying. You know what I mean? It must feel amazing to know that you did this thing that was exactly how you wanted it. And my assumption is people probably also feel the same way about the book business. And to some degree, that's true. But how true has that been for you as a musician? Like, is it still really satisfying to think about some of those projects? Or is there like a diminishing returns thing at play where it's really not like that?
Yeah, I think for me, it hasn't really been like that, because I think, you know, especially with music, it's incredibly subjective, right? Yeah. It's more like movie making, where I think it does give you the biggest thrill. So I will say, so let me start off by saying, like, I think the reason why you're drawn to movie making and I'm drawn to music making is because, man, there is a kind of feeling and thrill that comes with that because of the emotional content that it is that you don't get from a book. You just don't, you know what I mean? And I mean, I'm far more excited about getting a new like record in the mail to listen to than getting a new book, even if it's a book I can't wait to read. Like it doesn't have that same level of
that's
like,
a great point.
You know, there's, just jumping up and
yeah, there's something kind of visceral about it. There's something really emotional about music and movies that even a really emotionally like well drawn, you know, book like a Leif Anger thing or whatever.
It doesn't entertain you the same way. It's not instantaneously entertaining.
That's right.
That a movie or music.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And you got to get into it, right? And you know, so you got to sit down. You got to get into a particular space. And you know, for a movie, man, you grab whatever you like to eat when you're watching a movie.
Totally.
For music, you can hop in your car. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to experience it.
Yeah, dude, there's like comprehensive pleasure points all over the place.
Yeah,
I never thought of that though. But you're right. Like movies and eating. Yeah, movies and setting.
Yeah,
usually you're with somebody that you love. Like it's
collaborative. Watching a movie is collaborative.
So watching a movie is. Dude, okay, so I want to go in on that for a couple of minutes. And this is showing our age, but whatever, we're honest about that now, so who cares? when you and I grew up, man, and I want to know if this is true of you, because it was true of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the best music moments for me as a consumer were collaborative. Like, the most joyful moments of, like, I had this cousin, I still have him. He's like 4 or 5 years older than me, so he was in that, like, super sweet spot of coolness where whatever he was listening to or watching was like the thing that I wanted to listen to or watch. But I remember having these like marathon listening seshes where like he's just playing records for me and songs and like I'm soaking it up like a sponge. But the point being, crazy collaborative experience. Music was communal. Yeah. Music was like shared joyfully among people. I don't think it's that way for kids anymore. Like, and I'm basing this on the kids that live in my house, but also my college students. Like, I think music is much more private. I don't know that they have those like moments, even in the car, right? Even in the car, it's a list that you've curated. It's not like throwing tapes in and just seeing what lights the room up. You know what I mean?
It's headphones and AirPods.
It's headphones and AirPods. I don't know. Speak to that a little bit because I think the experience has changed.
Yeah, because I think, you know, I mean, gosh, man, I hate sounding this data, but it's just the reality, you know. So not everybody automatically, you know, not everybody's goal was to just automatically get a Walkman.
Yeah.
You know, which was the sort of like the personal, you know, sort of way of like listening to music and then sort of like doing it to where nobody else could kind of feed in or collab.
Yeah.
That, right.
Yeah.
And listening to music for me, it was like about me and my friends, like going to the store, buying the record or buying a cassette, immediately getting in the car, popping it, and listening to it, dissecting it, talking about it, or just going into the bedroom. If it's a vinyl, we had a record player, putting it on, just sitting around, hanging out, you know, just, you know, talking, joking around, eating something, listening to the record, commenting on it. So it was incredibly collaborative. And I think now it might still be like that, man. I just don't know because I'm not doing that as much. But when I see, like, most of the time when I'm seeing, like, the youth, the kids, right? I mean, they got their Beats headphones on or they got their AirPods in and they're just, it's something where it's like, it's something that's motivating them. Yeah. It's something that's kind of pumping them up. And, I don't know. It's a little, and we did that too, right? But I do feel like it was more like when I got a new record, my first thought was, I got to get my buddy Rick.
Yeah, who am I going to play this for?
Together with my brother Jason. Yeah, yeah. Right, we got to hear it together.
Totally, dude. Totally.
You know? And I'm sure there's something of that. But it seems like because everything is like a Spotify playlist, and there might not even be the opportunity for everybody to hear something too, especially if you're just playing everything on your phone. You know, other than playing it through that really bad phone speaker, which is not super fun. You know.
Yeah. Totally.
So maybe that's part of it too. Is like. You'd put it on speakers in a car that's where it sounded good, right? Or you'd be at home with a record player and you had like a system and like the thing actually like sounded good.
Yeah.
But I don't know, you don't get that with a phone.
Well, dude, it's funny you mentioned the Walkman because the Walkman, like in our era growing up, again, being like in high school and college, the Walkman was never a destination. You know what I mean? You got the Walkman for like bus trips or...
Totally,
you know, just 100. Some like emergency scenario where you needed music, but you couldn't get...
It wasn't your all. It wasn't your everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas
it was a supplemental way to listen to music.
It was a supplemental way to enjoy the music, whereas now the phone is your all, right?
It's everything.
The phone is your stereo. The phone is your Walkman. The phone is your like car thing. It's really... And I sound 1,000 years old right now, but I think it's a really crappy development, personally.
Yeah, it's not a great development, and it goes back to, I mean, again, we're rabbiting out now, but it goes back to when music became just purely, you know, a digital medium back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and all that stuff got kind of flipped on its head.
Yeah.
And so you have a new generation that has grown up with, I mean, man, I don't really buy records. I just buy singles. I just get songs.
Yeah.
And so it's not about a listening, it's not about a listening experience that includes a record. Or a series, or when I say record, I mean an album, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, sure.
And but it's more just about, well, I heard that single. I like that song. Do you like that song? What does your Spotify playlist look like? Well, it's just a collection of songs. It's not really artist driven. Mm-hmm. It's songs driven. Mm-hmm. And that kind of changed that. To be honest, it brought music back to the way music was when rock and pop first kind of like came into, you know, popularity in the 60s where everything was kind of a single.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then albums kind of followed that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 70s and the 80s were these in the 90s were these massive decades for albums.
Yeah.
Right. And then now it's kind of faded out of that a little bit because it's about putting together your own album of the songs you want. It's all personal choice.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't care what the artist is doing. You just want to, again, it's mixtape culture.
Totally.
For like, for the modern era, you know. But going back to what you said a minute ago, man, like the satisfaction, it was always a struggle because you would have these songs and depending, and it's the same way with writing and probably more, I would say more with movie making, like you can translate those songs a million different ways. And so what a lot of times would happen is I would have a song and it would be this big sort of anthemic number. And I would end up just not doing it the way that the song itself lent itself to be produced. And so when I look back now, I have these songs and they just weren't, they weren't quote unquote done right.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's hard for me to listen to them because I just, there's a lot of regret that goes into that. And I think, oh man, you had this really big chorus, but you kind of made it more of a mid-tempo thing and you just kind of, you leaned into some other things. You didn't make it as, you didn't go with your gut with this thing.
Yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
And so I got a bunch of records where I listened to a bunch of different songs and all I'm hearing are all the production sort of mistakes, quote unquote, that like mistakes in the sense that I wish I just would have done it a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody else is hearing that because they're just hearing what it was that you did.
Yeah.
And all I'm thinking is like, oh man, that vocal could have been, why didn't I spend more time on that vocal? And why was the mix like so bad on that song? And, you know, so that's all I, if I even listen to any of my material at all, which I never do, that's all I hear, you know? So it's actually, it's actually kind of this dejecting, dejective. Is that a word? Experience for me.
Dejected. Dejected. Yeah. Yeah. Dejected. Yeah. Definitely a word. Dejecting. I'm not sure, but I like it.
We just made it up.
I think we made it up, I'm in on that word 100%. No, I get it, dude. I get it. And I think movie making is proving to be the same thing where you realize because of budget or time or whatever constraint you're under, little compromises have to be made, you know, and thankfully they haven't been huge compromises. We didn't make the movie like about something else or whatever. We haven't had to cut scenes that I'm like really in love with, but I think for me watching it will be even a different experience than like KK watching the finished product, which I think for her, she'll be really happy and really proud and really excited. And I will need to like siphon off some of her enthusiasm because for me, it'll be an exercise in, like seeing all the, you know, all the little,
you'll just see the things you wish you would have changed.
Yeah. The things we wish we would have changed. So yeah, again, dude, as I get older in the Lord and more mature and hopefully less egotistical and all that stuff, like I want to be able to enjoy the stuff that we've done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And enjoy it on the level of this isn't my be all and end all. I'm not like deriving all of my self-worth from this, but yet I am able like humbly to actually look at it and say, yeah, that was good. I'm going to enjoy this.
I think that's it.
You know,
I think that's the key right there. Yeah. When it's not, when you are not putting everything on it, which is a weight that it can't bear anyway.
Yeah.
I think you can enjoy it. Here's a weird one for you, Big T, is that I think, you know, when I look back at even the couple of books that we collabed on, I don't think they're the greatest books in the world. And maybe I shouldn't say that, but you know, man, we got to be honest about that stuff. But I did what I could do given where I was at in that moment. So that was the best writing I could do in that moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but it was the best I had in that moment. And so because I'm a little bit older now, I can look back at projects like that and go, it's just what I had in the moment. I'm okay with it.
Totally,
like,
dude.
I would do different today, but like,
yeah.
But I'm okay with it being where it's at. And I think that's what that spiritual maturity does for you.
Yeah.
Is it just allows you to enjoy things more because you're just not being so hard on yourself. You're not acting like the whole world, the sun, rises and falls on some, you know, particular piece of art that you've done. Because when you're young, you think it does. And when you're older, you realize that it doesn't, you know, and you're okay with that.
Yeah, dude, then you get older and you realize like literally nobody cares. And if they care, they care for like 20 minutes, you know?
You have people that appreciate your work and you actually appreciate the people that appreciate your work.
Totally.
And you also come to the realization that there's a reason why they appreciate it. So why be harder on it than they are?
Totally.
They're not hard on it at all. They just, they enjoy it.
Yeah, no, completely, man. And that's a real, it's a real gift of the spirit, I think, because
100%,
a lot of aging artists who don't know Christ, like you see them just gnashing their teeth.
Dude.
Yeah. They're collapsing. Absolutely. They're gnashing their teeth. They tend to be super bitter, you know, super bitter about like the break they didn't get or the, you know, the editor that screwed their book up or whatever. And man, like the prospect of being that guy seems really scary because honestly, like I can see it in myself. Like I have those, I have those traits and tendencies apart from Christ. Like I could totally be that guy. But it's been nice to come into this moment where I can enjoy my old books that didn't do very well or that could have been better or whatever. And I can just kind of be glad they're out there, be glad that they paid some bills at a certain time. And yeah, like you said, I think you said it really well. Like, it was the best I could do in that particular set of circumstances, which really nobody knows about but us, right?
Or the best you even wanted to do.
Exactly.
You know, like, there's a desire part. Yeah. It's like, sometimes you're in a place where you have to create a piece of art, and there's everything is, you know, everything is influenced by, you know, sort of the state of your heart within that particular moment.
Yeah.
And God is compassionate. You know, he's a compassionate father.
Yeah.
And he's even with us in the creation of our art, and he's in us with the state of our heart during that creation process. And so, man, sometimes you're writing stuff, you're creating stuff, and you're in a weird season of life, and that's going to affect that in some unique ways, both negative or positive. And then I think you learn to just be more compassionate on yourself.
Yeah.
And I think as artists, we lack that. We lack compassion on ourselves. We're really hard on ourselves because we have an expectation that's probably not rooted in reality as much as we think it
is.
And so we just go around just being very critical of ourselves. But really, you know, God is not being that critical of us. He's the one that created us and created us to create art. And then and the people that enjoy the work that we do are certainly not at all, you know, unless we do something that they're super disappointed in. But even that is like, well, okay, but there's going to be something else.
Yeah.
So this is where I was at in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have quite the energy when I was making this that I did the last thing. And it's like, yeah, that's okay. I mean, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You never write these things or create these things in a like 100% perfect environment. Right. And
exactly.
I think that's the dream you have when you're young, right? When you started out making records, and I started out doing books, the dream was like, yeah, we'll get this big advance, and then I can just do music all day, or I can write all day, or whatever. But I mean, the world being what it is, like fallen and flawed and broken, like there's always like physical and emotional intrusions on your ability to do good work. And sometimes,
limitations,
dude, sometimes like you're just doing the work because you're a pro, and that's what pros do. Like, I'm going to write this. I'm going to bring it in on time because that's just what I do. You know,
I think there's a validity to that too, because I mean, like I had moments in my music career where I was able to just make records full time, right? I didn't have a day job. I was making a living at it, and there was all that kind of stuff. I don't think I did my best work.
Yeah.
In those moments, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, like as a writer, you know, you think, oh man, you know, I'm going to go to my cabin, you know, in Montana, you know, and I'm going to look out on the mountains and the lakes. I'm going to write the great, you know, American novel.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, there's a lot of challenges with everything I just described right there. You know what I mean? And sometimes this stuff happens when there's other life happening around you, sometimes can create better work. And
dude, I've never had that like writer's retreat experience. Like, I've never done it.
Really?
No, never. And I want to But there's a certain like guilt and self-loathing in me where I feel like if I leave my family, I'm abandoning them, and like I can't enjoy it anyway. You know what I mean?
And if they're with you, you wouldn't be able to get the
work. Well, if they're with me, I can't get the work done. And if I'm somewhere else, then I feel like a heel for leaving them. So yeah, it's a real catch-22, man. I don't know how.
Baby, wasn't that? I thought that was the France gig. I thought you went there, or did you write that after?
Dude, I forget what I was even writing in France, but no, France was
Household Gods.
Yeah, France was Household Gods. I did some of that there, but the kids were with us, dude.
So you just didn't have
it. Yeah, so the kids were with us, and I was playing football. Like, I was playing and coaching.
That's right.
Which was kind of a part-time gig. And I did get a lot done on Household Gods over there. But yeah, like, the kids were young. We were in this great little, like, cabin-y, cottage-y thing. It was awesome, dude. The whole thing was, like, legitimately awesome. But it wasn't, like, just hours and hours of private writing time, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
Dude, the closest I got, man, this is funny. This happened like 3 weeks ago. So we've got a little bit of property here. We've got like 3 acres, and I've been like,
no way. I had no idea you had some acres.
Baby, you got to come see it. You got to come see the acreage sometime. And so I'm out there, like I'm going all Grizzly Adams with a chainsaw and like deforesting, and I'm on the tractor, you know, which dude, I know, man, total.
You have a tractor?
Yeah, kind of departure from the old ethos, but I'm really getting into this.
Baby, I feel like I don't even know you right now.
Well, I know, dude. I know. So I'm getting into this stuff, and I'm going all crazy on these like trees and weeds, and I developed this insane case of poison ivy. right?
Oh.
It was a few weeks ago, and it's all over me, right? And
yeah.
We were supposed to go have this little overnight with some family in Nashville. The whole family is going to go. And long story short, I was so miserable from this poison ivy, and there were a couple things at the house that needed to be taken care of. KK was like, I'll just go, and you stay here. Just take care of the stuff. Take care of your, you know, your issue. And baby, it just so happened that I had just like finished a movie script that I was about to turn in, and it gave me like a 24-hour period to just print the script up, read it over in like total silence. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of magical, man. It was kind of magical. I'm not going to lie. Like, I made some revisions to the script, and I felt like, I was just like, this is what writers.
You're like, I need to be the guy in the Montana cap.
Yeah, I know, dude. And like, this is what writers in movies must feel like. Because whenever you watch a movie about a writer, it's always this like little lithe, willowy hipster guy in a sweater and like a great pair of glasses. Yeah. And he's going to his cabin in Montana to like be creative. And
totally.
I felt that for a minute, dude. I got to feel that, which was really nice.
It's amazing. Good for you,
oh,
baby.
Thanks, baby.
That's great.
Yeah.
Appreciate
it. Baby, do we have anything else to add on this thing? We're 36 minutes deep here. We said we wanted to go
Man,
short.
I feel like, I know. I think if we just cut it now, we can actually do part two.
Yes.
Down the road.
Yeah, because I have more questions, but we should cut it.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, go to this little bookseller, Amazon.com. Look up The Outstanding Life of an Awkward Theater Kid. Yeah, dude, it's a good little website. Harvest House is the publisher. Your boy, Ted Kluck, is the author, and you should buy like dozens of copies, because then it'll allow me to do my next one. Baby, I've got a third book planned for this trilogy. Have we?
I think you told me the title. Yeah. Are you allowed to tell our
public? I'm telling it. Because I want to put the pressure on Harvest House, because I know they're listening.
Absolutely.
I know everybody at the company is listening.
There. Oh, everyone's listening.
I got a third graphic novel. It's called The Dog Lives. It's about a boy and his dog, and the dog lives. The dog never dies in the book. And it's just about a nice relationship between a boy and his dog. And
which is amazing since you're not a dog guy. Like,
well, and it's amazing since every like young adult piece of fiction, you get attached to the dog and then they kill it off, which
right,
sucks,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to end that trend, man, with The Dog Lives, Lord willing, provided Harvest House lets me do it. And you can help that along by buying the second one. Baby, this has been fun, man. It's always a little different feel, kind of enjoyable.
Without Pipe.
A little more introspective, but yeah, we love Pipe too, man. And we wish him well as he's out solving the world's problems. We hope he's able to eradicate COVID and racism and, you know, just.
I think he's doing
both those things, actually.
Yeah, he is.
I feel good about it, man. I feel bullish on Pipe ending both of those problems in our culture.
Yeah, I mean, as the brother of Abraham Piper, would you expect any less?
Do you know the brother?
That's the question.
I don't know Abraham at all.
I'm just totally.
Oh, you're joking around. Yeah, you're just joking around. I was like, do you know that guy? Because I don't. baby, we've done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Scripture and brain science agree. Meditating on God's word transforms us and reduces stress in our lives. I'm Jody Nisnik, host of So Much More, Creating Space for God, a scripture meditation podcast. And each week I give you space to hear God's word, listen to the Spirit, and pray about what's on your heart. And then we have a thoughtful conversation with guests to help us go deeper. Listen and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.